91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour, we hear about a North Miami Beach delinquent gang leader who quit a life of violence, crime, and drugs. The program was recorded in June of this year. Good afternoon. It's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. Drug dealing and mail fraud were but two of his crimes. But inside was an idealistic kid who dreamt of being an attorney. Against slim odds, he made it. Dropout David Lee Windiger now practices law in Florida and Georgia legally. He has a nonprofit organization which helps high-risk kids gain literacy, a GED, to start a new life. He's amazed himself from dope dealing to reading books. Meet attorney David Lee Windiger next, after the news.
And it is today's Topical Currents, Wednesday edition. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. For many observers, mixed martial fighting is a vulgarity. It's been termed human cockfighting. And with us now is Jonathan Gottschall.
While an adjunct English professor and close to age 40, he trained hard for 2 years to fight a legitimate mixed martial arts bout. He's chronicled his pursuit in the book.
This is South Florida's public radio station, WLRN.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. For the next hour, we visit with the remarkable David Lee Windiger, now Windiger Esquire. Earning that sobriquet was quite a long shot. His North Miami Beach gang merely called him Red. And later, David Windiger of the Hood was arrested at age 11, and then 12 more times.
He fought, he dealt drugs, carried out mail robbery. He's now an attorney. He helps similar teens to read and gain a GED. He's an author as well. We'll talk about his book, The Amer-ICAN Dream, his story in the making.
It's quite a title.
Yes. And I just want to say it's a coming-of-age story of perseverance and survival in the face of abject adversity and poverty. And it's a story of redemption and salvation, and it's a story of hope. Welcome to you, David Windiger.
Joseph, Bonnie, thank you so much for having me on the air with you guys today. I'm grateful for the opportunity because I know that this airing will happen in the jurisdiction where the 95% of the chapters in my book took place.
Right, which came, you know, that wasn't going to be my first question, but, well.
It was interesting to read about all the locales.
Yes, it was. I didn't know a lot of the places, but you know what, David? It really surprised me because I was unaware of these gangs. It's 5 miles from where I live. The crime rings, the drug rings. How can that be that we don't know this is happening?
North Miami Beach.
Yeah.
Well, it's just kind of like you see in the movies, the railroads literally will separate two type of communities, lower socioeconomic environments and affluent environments. And technically, affluents don't have reasons to go to lower socioeconomic environments. So we tend to not look that way. We just disregard it and we go on about our business.
Mm. Well, give us the street boundaries, kind of where your hood was in North Miami Beach.
In North Miami Beach, North Miami Beach Senior High School area is John F. Kennedy Middle School. Mm-hmm. Then the Star Creek Complex where we are running the drugs from was on Northwest 191st, is Northwest 3rd Avenue. And then you have Carroll City. All these areas, Miami-Dade was a wide area. We didn't have just North Miami Beach. North Miami Beach was where a majority of us lived, but we had, you know, connections in Carroll City, Liberty City, North Miami, pretty much anywhere in Miami-Dade County.
David, as I was reading the book, I found myself wondering so many times, how did he do this and how did he survive and what gave him the strength to persevere? So that's really my question. Why didn't you give up and what kept you going and how did you survive?
Well, my family was my catalyst, and everything that I went through was a challenge on my faith. I needed to believe that there was a greater purpose for my life than selling drugs, living on the streets. What happened was I wanted to elevate my family's name. I didn't want to continue down that path because I knew it was either going to be 6 feet in a pine box or jail bars, and I was done with all those things. I've experienced them. I made plenty of money on the streets. I wanted to find a legitimate way to do things, and I wanted to believe that I needed to have faith that there was a greater purpose for my life.
We talked about you being arrested at age 11 over some bicycle
pegs.
But you were different from the start, also a red-haired Brazilian youngster, I suppose, with your last name of German descent.
Right. I was actually Argentinian.
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, it's fine. But yeah, I stole those pegs because I felt that I should be able to afford a set of $20 pegs so my brother and I can tow each other to a local park, Grand Olds Park, to play football. We couldn't tow each other because we had one bike, and it was around football season. I think it was January 20th, 1990 exactly. And, it was NFL playoffs, so everybody was excited about the playoffs. There was a huge pickup game at Grand Olds Park, and we needed to make it there on time, and we couldn't because we only had one bike. And sharing was never an issue in our household because my parents taught us right. I mean, I just didn't make a good decision. I thought that I should be able to own a pair of $20 pegs so I can tell my brother. And I went and I stole a set of pegs and I got caught.
But there was a transformational moment for you because until that time, you were a good boy, albeit impoverished. But you were a good son. You were a good brother. You loved your brother Christian. But somehow you said, I deserve this and I'm gonna take them. What was that? Do you have any idea now?
Well, it was poverty. I didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't understand how to improve the situation that when Friday came along, the fridge was empty. I didn't understand poverty. I just couldn't wrap my mind around it. And so I didn't know how else to do anything except just take it. Take what I thought was rightfully mine because I couldn't get it otherwise. I couldn't get a job. My parents couldn't afford it. And so I made a poor decision. And that the issue of poverty and not understanding how to wrap my mind around it sent me off into the darkest years of my life.
You and your family lived also in California and Argentina. Quickly explain how you became to living into Miami.
My father first started off in California, and when I was a little kid, he used to do independent contracting for a company that he would paint industrial machinery for. He worked for about 6 months painting these machines, and he was supposed to get paid, but they kept promising they'll pay him. They wouldn't. And so eventually he filed suit. He won at the trial level, and he was awarded damages and a good amount of money, whatever they owed him. And then what ended up happening was the private company that was employing him appealed the decision, hired an attorney, and at the appellate level, my father lost. The only thing he had left was enough to take us back to Argentina, where he knew he can protect us and take care of us. So we left. And that's what I remember from the judicial system, that it planted the first seeds of bitterness in my heart because it told my dad that justice was denied him, not because he was wrong, but because he was foreign and because he was poor and he couldn't get a counsel appointed to him like in criminal cases. So we ended up going to Argentina, and poverty was another thing in Argentina. There's dirt roads, there's no cars, people are asking for food in the streets. It was tough in the late 80s in Argentina, but my father believed in America. He didn't want to give up on his dream, so he stacked up some cash and he moved us. And this time we went east, we went to Miami.
So here we are with the bike pegs. What happened? The consequences? You got caught.
Yes. It was embarrassing. My parents weren't expecting this, and then I ended up getting put on community control for a while. It just made poverty worse for us because there was a cost to it. There was a court cost. I had to go before a judge every single month, and then I had to do a bunch of community service hours. So I became the bad kid in the neighborhood. I was a kid arrested at 11, so I was already anointed the bad kid. And that's exactly what happened with kids. If you tell them that they're brilliant, they're going to show you that. They're going to show you that they're the best kid that they can possibly be. But if you tell them that they're a bad kid and they need to be in court and they got to do community service hours and they can't hang out with other kids, they're going to repeat that. That's going to be their reputation.
What kind of community service does 11 or 12 year old kid do?
Yeah,
I had to go clean up Olita Park. That's what I did.
So when did you join the gang, and what gang is it, and does it still exist?
No, the gang doesn't exist anymore. It's a criminal street gang. When you talk about gangs, there's different ways to look at it. There's criminal street gangs, which are cliques of people that come together to serve a common goal or a need that they have amongst each other in the community. And that's what we were. And then you have nationwide gangs, the Bloods, the Crips, Tres Puntos, MS-DOS, those type of gangs that are just been historically together. We were a gang that came together. We called ourselves Star Creek, and it was about 10 to 12 of us, and it rotated. A lot of different people came in and out. But we came together around the age of 14, 15. I saw my first murder around 13 at Sky Lake Mall movie theaters. And ever since then, I was thinking, you know what? If I don't have some protection around me, I could end up with a bullet in me, because I was already fighting a lot. At the age of 13, walking home from school, I was in tons of fights. I mean, every single Friday, it was a fight. I knew it. My dad luckily was a boxer growing up in Argentina. So he taught me how to fight, and I was able to defend myself. But it got to the point where when these kids picked up that I could fight, they would send 9, 10 kids after me, and they would leave me bloodied.
Yeah, and was that because it was because there was gang stuff going on, or was they didn't like you, or because you're red hair, or what was it?
I guess it was because of my skin color, because there was this thing called Cracker Day in JFK. And so every Friday, the black kids would come after the white kids on Cracker Day, and they would try to beat you up. And so it was a real thing, and I just had to experience it every single Friday.
You mentioned that poverty promotes the gangs, but also, reading your book, I was kind of surprised how addictive being in the gang was for you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you felt oppressed by poverty all your life, and then when you can have means to an end for something that you need, why would you stop? It's the worst type of addiction. It just sucks you in and you cannot get out. And then you try to find ways to make more money, just like a career. You try to climb the rungs of a ladder in a career. Same thing with being in a gang and generating income through illegal activity. You want to find ways to make more money.
We're speaking with David Lee Windicher. He's a criminal defense attorney. He's licensed to practice in both Georgia and Florida. And he is currently, I think you're currently the managing partner at Windicher Law Firm, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. We're going to take a short break on today's Topical Currents, and we'll be right back with David. Stay with us.
Wow, I'm hooked. Peter J. here with Bonnie Berman. Bonnie, what an incredible story as it's unfolded so far. I can only imagine where it goes from here.
It's truly an unbelievable story.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll hear more soon. What we're doing here today is, as we're listening to this gripping tale here, we're reminded of the fact that Topical Currents brings you a wealth of information, a wealth of stories, a wealth of connection to the South Florida community, Monday through Thursday here on WLRN. Been going on for how many years? 20-something?
99, I think.
Yeah, that's right. It was 1999. Yeah. Yeah, so close to 26 years already. Just an amazing wealth of material here, generated right here in our studio, this very studio where we're sitting right now in downtown Miami. And it's here because listeners support it. And just a few times a year, we come to you during programming to remind you of that, so that we hope you will find it important enough to contribute to. So if this particular program, Topical Currents, and all of our locally originating programs like the Sunshine Economy and the Florida Roundup, and of course our wonderful jazz music programs, the Michael Stocks Folk and Acoustic Music Program, if these programs are of value to you, on top of all the great news and information programming from NPR and others, we hope you'll contribute now. So let me give you the phone number. That's 866-247-9576. 866-247-WLRN. The website, WLRN.org. Bonnie, this drive ends tomorrow, right?
It ends tomorrow. It doesn't have to. It can end tonight.
That's true. Well.
But something is ending tonight, and that's that everybody who makes their contribution is entered into the grand prize drawing for a $1,500 shopping spree at the Colonnade Outlets at Sawgrass Mills and Sunrise. And you don't even have to drive and deal with traffic. We'll take you there in a limousine and give you champagne should you want it. So it's a great deal. We're going to have a drawing at 7 this evening. One lucky winner is going to have a fabulous holiday prize. It could be you. We ask you to make your contribution as generously as you can to get entered into the drawing at WLRN.org or at 866-247-9576. 866-247-WLRN.
I've been coming to the station now for 24 and a half years, but I vividly remember the first time I walked into a control room here at the station. My mouth fell open. It was just absolutely fascinating to me to watch radio taking place. And you know what? You could do that and at the same time have lunch with Bonnie here and with Joseph Cooper, the host of Topical Currents. We'd love to have you join us here. You can watch an entire episode of Topical Currents taking place live and in person. And we're told we have an unlimited quantity of this, so we'll find a place to put you. This is for a pledge level of $250, a one-time contribution, or split that up into monthly installments if you'd like. And we would love to have you join us. And all you have to do is sign up at WLRN.org and choose Lunch with Joe and Bonnie as your thank you gift, or do that by phone at 866-247-9576.
So the name of the book that we're talking about today with David Lee Windicher is his book, The American Dream, His Story in the Making. It's a play on the word history in the making. And for your $150 pledge or $12.50 a month, we will thank you with a copy of the book. I can tell you that the book is truly gripping. It's so well written. It's so well done. And there is a follow-up to the book. In fact, because of the show, David's has an organization, a nonprofit called Red Ink, which means rehabilitation through education, where he gets kids GEDs. And that organization has really taken off since the show. So pick up a copy of the book at $12.50 a month and support WLRN, support the great programming at 866-247-9576, 866-247-WLRN, or online, it's WLRN.org. We're going to get back to the program. So please continue to make your contributions.
You determine the curriculum, the schedule, and your career with the University of Miami's Master of Arts in Liberal Studies program. It's a degree that cultivates deeper, more critical thinking. More at miami.edu/MALS.
Red Barn Theater, 319 Duval Street, is proud to present the comedy Fools by Neil Simon, December 15th through January 19th. In this wacky folk fable, a Russian Hamlet sets the stage for a love story that might relieve the daffy townspeople of an ancient curse of stupidity. Known for being fresh, funny, warm, and witty, Fools keeps audiences laughing. Tickets at 305-296-9911 or redbarntheater.com. 8 p.m. curtain, brought to you by the Monroe County Tourist Development Council.
The Biscayne Bay Aquatic Preserve's EcoTour program presents Bayologist Day Camp, December 21st to 24th. Kids experience Biscayne Bay marine life through island scavenger hunts, shoreline walks, and other hands-on activities. Registration at bayologistcamp.com. You can explore your creative side at the Boca Raton Museum of Art School's Open House this Sunday, where visitors can learn about art classes for adults, teens, and children. You can meet the teachers and see demonstrations of art techniques in pottery, stone carving, jewelry making, painting, and observe a figure drawing class. A raffle will be held and refreshments available while visiting the Open House on Sunday, December 13th from 1 to 4 p.m. You can learn more at bocamuseum.org.
Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman is today's Topical Currents. Our guest is David Windicher. He's joining us from WABE in Atlanta. We're talking about his book, The American Dream, His Story in the Making. And we're learning how David Lee came from being a North Miami gang member to an attorney who practices law in both Georgia and Florida, and who was particularly eager to practice law in Florida and went through a lot to get to it.
A lot, and we're going to get to that. And not only that, was sworn in where he had been formerly
in an orange jumpsuit.
Yeah, right. Oh, but let's talk to David since he's right here. Okay. All right. I just want to give our listeners an idea. If you could give us a snapshot of ages 16 to 19, there was the jumping into your gang, the crimes, the arrests, the drugs, the dealing, the 24/7 drug, drive-through almost operation with the pot. Fortunately, you stayed away from cocaine, correct?
Yes, that's right. We were smart enough to know that the statute for cocaine would keep us in prison for a long time, so we didn't want to run those kind of risks. And on top of that, the type of people who would be purchasing cocaine were not the type of people that we wanted coming through our drive-thru. It was, in fact, a drive-thru.
Okay, so give us a little snapshot of those years.
I compare it to a career, because being on the streets and being a gang member and selling dope and doing illegal things to make money helped me build a reputation. And the stronger my reputation, the more I can grow. And so we went everything from stealing cars and sending them to chop shops and doing fraud on checks or fighting to protect our territory or, you know, selling drugs. We became very well known for our dope hole. That's what we called it, the dope hole. We became very known for it. And it gave me an addiction. It was the key to overcoming poverty. I started feeling during those years that poverty was the biggest challenge that America faced. And I noticed that the gap between the rich and the poor was astounding to me. So the solution was clear: make money however I could to get away from poverty. And that's what I was doing. I became very dangerous in the way I was thinking, and I started acting recklessly. I didn't want to not take risks because I felt like I had nothing to lose. So I did whatever I could to enhance my reputation, just like anybody would try to enhance their reputation in a career.
Talk about your relationship with law enforcement during that time.
It was really rough. I was arrested 12 times within a 25-mile radius. That is not a coincidence. I carried guns because I was scared of officers. A lot of the things that you see nowadays with the smart technologies are being captured, and the Michael Browns, the Eric Garners, the Walter Scotts, Freddie Grays, and the Khalif Browders of the world, we know about their story because someone had an iPhone and captured it on some media. Back then, it was happening all the time. I can't tell you how many times I was walking down the street, profiled, pulled up by a cop, guns drawn, handcuffed, drug money taken from me, dope taken from me, no arrest. See you later, kid. Or had my butt whipped by him.
Just skipping ahead for a second, with the law enforcement troubles and what we are hearing about, what are you trying to do about that right now?
Well, what I'm doing is trying to help kids that are similarly situated as I was. So I started a nonprofit organization. It's called Red Ink. Red was my nickname growing up, and Red Ink is the DBA for Rehabilitation Enables Dreams. And the reason I'm doing that is because you have to be able to understand someone to reach them. You cannot reach them unless you are able to understand them or try to understand them. And because I know what they're going through, I know that education is the most important thing that they can have. If they have an education, it'll empower them, it'll increase our communities, it'll help. You know, the higher literacy amongst lower socioeconomic communities will minimize recidivism, and that's what I'm doing. I'm working with a lot of people on that. And that's just me giving back because I have a duty. It's my job to go back. I may have a career now, but my next step is now to make the world a better place. I can't let having a career and making some money change me. I made it, but I'll never forget where I came from. And so I have to help these kids get to where I'm at.
It wasn't easy getting into law school. It wasn't easy getting into college to begin with even, but to get to law school and then also to pass the bar examination in two states is pretty amazing. Tell us a little bit of the fortitude that it took to accomplish those things.
The bachelor's degree, I felt so out of place. I felt like I still was speaking in Ebonics. I had to learn how to conduct myself and dress better, and I needed to understand how to acclimate myself going from selling dope to reading books. So that wasn't easy, but I did it. I finished at the top of my class because I would not quit. I would just not quit. And then with law school, it was extremely difficult, but John Marshall gave me a chance to get in. I started doing things that would get me practical experience because I knew I needed to, A, get practical experience to be able to pass the bar, and B, I needed to show that I can volunteer for different things so that they can see that I was of the character to be able to practice law. Then the whole process with the Florida bar, I mean, that was a chapter in and of itself because of what they made me go through.
If you would, David, would you read from page 180 in your book? Do you have it with you?
I do. Okay. It says, I do not regret joining a gang. I do not regret quitting a gang. I made plenty of poor decisions in my life. I do not regret any of them. I risked my life in ways no one ever should and for reasons that made no sense. But by the fall of 2001, my new challenge was to see how far I could take my life. If I was going to continue to take risks, they would be to reach a purpose. I wanted to live life of substance. I wanted to lead a life worth remembering. I knew that in any breakthrough, the first guy through the wall usually comes out bloody. But it would be worth it. I was willing to risk it all for a real chance at a real life. I would accomplish my goals and fulfill my promise to my parents, or I would literally go down fighting. I memorized the words that Acosta said to me that night in front of my parents' house. Those words resonated so deeply that I cannot hope to properly explain what they meant to me. But here's my attempt. I needed to be told that I couldn't do it. I needed to hear my own fears and self-doubts come out of the mouth of a kid who was just like me. Acosta's words gave me courage, momentum, and the determination to change the hood's perception of itself. The hood was a self-imposed cycle, a self-fulfilling prophecy. We believed that we couldn't obtain, and worse, didn't deserve the American dream. And so we crippled ourselves. We acted out against the stigma in most destructive ways possible. We adopted a, the world screwed me over, so screw the world mentality, and lived accordingly. The thing about sticking it to society is that when we were the only ones who were hurt by our hatred and anger. Nothing we did proved anything other than the society was right.
Very, very profound. David, tell us a little bit about how it isn't so easy to get out of this gang and the hell that you and your father and your family had to go through to get out.
Once people found out that I didn't want to contribute in that sense anymore, I knew there was going to be some retribution, and immediately out of the gates there were fights in front of my house. I probably was in more fights after I decided to stay away from the streets than before. My dad and I, my brother, fought so many times in front of my house. There's a story in there where it says about what happened to my dad. I mean, we had seven or eight people show up in a car, and it was just three of us, and we fought and fought, and we ended up winning the fight, but we suffered some injuries. My dad got hit with a rock in his head, and he was bloodied everywhere, and at that point, I was at my darkest point because I didn't know if I was going to be able to survive it. Looking over my shoulder every minute is what it felt like I needed to do when I decided to kind of, sort of speak, turn my back on the streets.
Now that you're a criminal defense attorney, I'm sure you've been in the situation where you have a youngster in front of you that you're defending who has no idea that the guy in that neat suit and tie had such a background. Do you tell them about that?
I tell all of my clients my story because I want them to understand that I can relate to them on a foundational level. I'm trying to do whatever I can to teach them not to make the same mistakes that I made. And I'm trying to spark their minds by sharing my story with them. You know, by looking at me, you wouldn't be able to tell.
No, not at all. I want you to take on the the Florida bar story now. You were already licensed. You passed the bar in Georgia. You had to convince them that you were okay to sit for the bar because of your criminal record. Then you decided you wanted to go back and be able to practice in Florida.
The one thing that stands out most to me about that whole process is whatever happened to United States Constitution's full faith and credit clause. I mean, I was practicing for a year. I was found fit in Georgia. And I mean, these people made me go through so much administrative red tape. I mean, I went through the entire role, really. There were so many things. At one point, they asked me to provide notices of appearance for court dates. Who keeps those? No one keeps a record of all of their notices to appear. They were just asking one thing after the other. It took literally from November of 2012 to March of 2014 to finish the process. A year and a half of my life invested into going back and forth. And it got to the point where around October of 2013, I said, you know what, listen, how about we just meet eye to eye? Because I want you guys who are judging me to look me in my eye and understand and hear with your own ears my story, because there is no way that I can keep submitting. It got really costly.
Why were you so motivated to get that Florida bar accreditation? And also, what does it mean for you to be on this program in your locale? A lot of people are probably listening that know you.
Well, the reason why Florida meant so much to me is because it brings my rehabilitation full circle. At some point during the process, I realized that the journey wasn't about me. It was about the people who needed my story. And for those people is the one that I was fighting for. The red ink clients, the people who I'm sponsoring their GEDs, those folks are the ones who I wanted to fight for because I saw a bigger picture.
We're speaking with David Windicher. He's an attorney practicing in both Florida and Georgia, or he can practice in both Florida and Georgia. And we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to focus really on what David's doing today, and we'll be joined by the DeKalb County Solicitor General. That's DeKalb County in Georgia when we come back. So stay with us.
Great to have you with us this afternoon for this kind of gripping edition of Topical Currents. What an amazing story of redemption we're listening to today. My name is Peter Jay. I'm the Director of Radio Programming here at WLRN, joined in the studio by Topical Current co-host Bonnie Berman and Michael Stock in the control room. And we're all here just shaking our heads in wonder at the story that is unfolding before us this hour. Just one of thousands of stories we've heard on Topical Currents over the years, over the last 14 years or so, of amazing programming originating right here in our studios in South Florida. Programming that reflects upon and serves the South Florida community. We would love you to be a part of that community, maybe in a new way for you, by contributing to WLRN. And by that, I mean when you do contribute financially to the station, you're bringing yourself and all of us here in South Florida stories that matter, stories that are about where we live and help us where we live. We have lots of new members joining us today during this, our second day of a three-day-long fund drive this December. Quickly reading them, Jean from Tamarack, Diane from Boca, Abdi from Miramar, David Pompano, Elizabeth Coral Gables, Lourdes Homestead. I read these to thank them, but also to recognize the fact that they are new members. And there are so many joining us during this pledge drive because they realize the importance of supporting public radio. They've never done it before, and they have stepped up. It's easy to do, takes about 2 minutes, and you know what? You, as they do now, are going to feel really good about it. You can join us online at WLRN.org. That's our website. Just look for the red Donate Now button. You can do it by phone at 866-247-WLRN. That's 866-247-9576. Bonnie, this must have been some experience for you talking to Mr. Windicher.
It was, and I was so moved, so emotionally moved when I read the book, mm-hmm. you know, so I was really looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. And I encourage you, if you'd like to pick up a copy of the book for just $12.50 a month on our sustainer plan or a one-time gift of $150, if you know of somebody struggling, I gave it to a few people. I mm-hmm. told a few people about it, rather, and they got it and gave it to people that they knew were struggling. So it's just a great story of redemption. 866-247-9576 if you'd like to pick up the book. $12.50 a month, or online WLRN.org. Of course, it's our fall our end of year membership campaign. And
it is
so,
still fall, technically.
That's mm-hmm. true. But we are looking for your contributions to continue to bring you the programs that you depend on, that you enjoy, that you rely on each day. 866-247-9576.
And we really do need to hear from you. We have $30,000 left to raise today to stay on track for this fundraising event. You know, it ends tomorrow night at 7, whether we're successful or not. And success, of course, means simply having the money to pay the bills that are already on the table. This is money budgeted for this current fiscal year, not for next year. So it's absolutely critical. Of course, we have all kinds of incentives. One for you might be the opportunity to have lunch with Bonnie here and her co-host Joseph Cooper at the WLRN studios, and then watch an edition of Topical Currents taking place live from our control room. Let me tell you, if you haven't been in a radio control room, it's kind of like being in the cockpit of an airplane. It's It's really interesting. It's really fun. And that's for a pledge level of $250. If you want to break that up into monthly installments on our sustainer program, that's fine. It comes out to $20.83333333 per month. And we'd love to have you do that.
that if it's your want. And Bonnie, there's also an unbelievable drawing taking place later today, but let me give you the number. It's 866-247-9576. Online, it's WLRN.org.
Right, and that drawing is 7 this evening. I'll just tell you very quickly, you could win a $1,500 shopping spree at the Colonnade Outlets at Sawgrass Mills at sunrise with limousine transportation and champagne. Somebody's going to win it at 7 tonight. It could be you. So make your call to 866-247-9576. Give as generously as you can at WLRN.org. Back to the program.
Simone Nelzy has interviewed for ESPN, has a byline as a Huffington Post contributor, was VP of student government in high school, and a Ford scholarship recipient. She participated in the Children's Services Council of Broward County's 21st Century Community Learning Center program at Hollandale High School. Simone credits after-school programs that also offer academic assistance and tutoring for fostering her success. Learn more about the many programs offered at cscbroward.org. Our focus is our children.
Envision your future. St. Thomas University, a place of new thinking, global focus, and innovative programs designed to help professionals attain a head start in their chosen career. With the brand new graduate program tuition reduction that includes books, you can now get a quality private education at a cost you can afford. Learn more at stu.edu/grad school.
The preservation and survival of your collectible art, documents, and heirlooms is greatly influenced by their framing. Archival custom framing can protect their appearance, condition, longevity, and value. Conserve Art. Our name is what we do. ConserveArt.net.
And it's today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We return with David Winditcher. We're talking about his book, The AmeriCan Dream: History in the Making, and he's joining us from Atlanta station WABE.
And joining us now from DeKalb County, from their Solicitor General's office in Decatur, Georgia, is DeKalb County Solicitor General Sherry Boston. Welcome to you, Ms. Boston.
Thank you so much, Bonnie, for having me on the program.
It's great to have you. Would you first explain what your relationship is? You're kind of on opposite sides from David, is that right?
Well, yes. David actually is a defense lawyer, but we often partner with people that are just genuinely interested in giving back to the community. And David can do that in a myriad of ways, and we were happy to partner with him because we thought he had a lot to offer, which he does.
So tell us what you're doing about the diversion program. Is that what it's called? You're the
we have a program called GOALS, which stands for Gaining Opportunities and Living Smarter. And it's a program I started when I came into office in 2011. And it is a program that is geared towards young people that do generally have some criminal history, but we feel like they are in an opportunity where they can be rehabilitated and not graduate to committing serious felony offenses that may get them, you know, caught up in the prison system for life. But in order to do that, they need a lot more than just the traditional courtroom atmosphere.
So explain what you give them.
And so during the program, they do things like life skills classes. We give them job training. They do community service. They will complete often not just their GED, but get high school equivalency certificates. And we do things like giving them classes on how to be more financially secure in a sense of understanding what you need to make, how to pay your bill, all these different things that they need in order to set themselves up when they do get that job or when they can get into to college to go get their associates or bachelor's. They need resources that can teach them how to be productive members of society.
And David, how do you work with Sherry Boston? What do you do?
What I do is I go in there and I sit with the people who are in the program one-on-one, and I talk to them. And what I try to do is I try to relate to them the actual process and why it's so important. Because the reason I believe it's important, and I'm grateful for people like Sherry, because progressive thinkers like that can change the thinking of the people growing up in those situations. When I was growing up in that situation, I thought that the government was the bad guy. I always used to think, hey, look, I can't trust them. They have a badge, they have a gun, they have a robe, they want to put me in jail. And that's not really the truth. The truth is that there are good folks out there in the system that have these diversion programs like Miss Boston, and they're doing anything that they can to help put good people back into the community. And so what I do is I meet with them and I say, look, on a day-to-day basis, we may be on the opposite sides of the tribunal, but today, for people like you that we believe that we can put back into the community, and instead of having you have a record, we want you to have a resume, we are doing whatever we can to help you. So I talk to these kids and I do whatever I can to get to know them on a personal level and just speak to them about what they need to do and give them coaching. Just like Ms. Boston was saying, we have financial workshops, we have resume writing, we have community service to teach them how to go out there and work for things. And that's what I've been doing. And it's been a blessing because it feels that we are actually making a difference with these kids.
Is there an example you can tell us of specific?
Just recently, as of last Friday, I met a young man, and I don't want to give his name, but I'm very proud of him because he told me he reflects on his issues, and his issues are that he is poor, and he is just so mad about the fact that he doesn't have enough, and that's why he acts out. And he said that all he wants to do is be an artist one day, not an artist as in a rapper. He wants to actually draw. He wants to be an artist. And so he said that he doesn't know where to start, and we talked about the GED program, and he promised me that he would do the GED. I told him that we would work Mrs. Boston's program and my program. We would sponsor the GED so that we could help this kid. And, I mean, he lit up. He lit up that someone would listen to his story, that someone actually cared, and that somebody wanted to put resources behind his aspirations. And that was just this Friday, and that's just the most recent one. But there are so many of them. I mean, there's 30, 40 people per class. Mm.
David, you've displayed such grit, industry, and perseverance in your young life. You must be one heck of a defense attorney.
I've never been one to pound my chest, but I enjoy what I do. I'm extremely passionate about what I do. I feel like I went through the system enough times when I was younger that I kind of had some understanding of how things happen in a courtroom. And because of that experience, I feel like my passion has only increased, and I just love what I do.
One of the most painful things for you was watching as your brother and two sisters started going down a similar path, emulating you, in where they were so good, you were also good, and then you started going off, and so they started going off. So if you would give us an update now about where your parents, your sisters, and your brother.
Sure. My whole thinking was always, if they follow me while I'm doing bad, will they follow me while I'm doing good? And I don't take any credit for the success that my siblings have had, because they're phenomenal humans and I love them to death. But just to give you an update on where they're at, the youngest one recently graduated from Florida State University, and she is a behavior analyst for autistic children. She's living in San Diego. Giselle, the second youngest, she is a human resources director for a huge company that does solar paneling in San Diego. They live together. Not live together, but they live in the same community. And my brother has an online store, a bookstore, and he also works, and he is of the best character. He is the person I always go to whenever I need to have a conversation about what things are happening in my life. And he is just such a good person. No one ever got arrested again. No one ever had any troubles, and just everything turned around. And I'm so proud of them. My folks are still living in North Miami Beach, which I'm doing whatever I can to try to get them maybe to move to San Diego or to Atlanta.
David, and also just to tie things up, how about your friend Mr. Torres, who was convicted? Mm-hmm. Are you still in touch?
I do. I speak with him all the time. We write to each other once a month, or we speak on the phone. And I'm inspired by him because he has done everything he can to position himself to not become a recidivist when he gets out. He has educated himself in there as much as he could. His writing skills, you could see that they developed, and I would always write him because of that. And he's someone that I kind of look up to because it could have been me, and he has taken this very well, and now he's planning on getting out and getting the barbershop that we always talked about that he would have.
So you're still with us, Miss Boston?
Yes.
Yeah, so what are the two of you have coming up? I mean, what are plans for working together, more plans for working together? Do you have things that are going to be developed?
Absolutely. Well, David started volunteering with us earlier this year, and he has made a tremendous impact on our goal participants. We were looking for that sort of last leg of our stool in our program, which was finding someone that our participants could really relate to and feel like they wanted to motivate themselves to do whatever they wanted. And David has been a tremendous, tremendous part of that, doing that one thing that we just simply couldn't do. And so we look forward to that continuing relationship and David continuing to be a mentor to the kids in our program, because that's super important. Also, David has graciously earmarked $1,500 from his nonprofit to help pay for the GEDs that our participants can't afford. Mm. This program is completely funded by grant money and things that we can scrape up when it comes to paying for these services. I mean, the vast majority of these participants have zero funds, and we are giving them classes and counseling that would cost most people in the thousands of dollars. So to have an organization like his nonprofit willing to help support our program, I am genuinely thankful for.
David, it sounds like a movie to me.
funny you should mention that.
If it's in God's plan, it'll all work out, I believe. I've recently signed what's called a shopping agreement with the Tyler Perry Studios. And so we're in the process of finding a writer to put it into a movie-type format. And then, I guess, a budget and then proposed cast. So over the next 12 to 24 months, you know, hopefully things will come together and we'll be able to do that, because the book has gained a lot of momentum. It was number one new release under biographies, and people are telling me they're reading it in one day. And so hopefully that movie will eventually be out.
Well, it's been great to talk to you. Do you want to give a shout out to your folks?
I just want to tell them that I'm grateful for everything that they did for me. And I'm going to keep fighting to continue to be the man that they raised me to be. And I'm just so grateful for everything that they did for me. I love them so much.
David Windicher, he is a criminal defense attorney. He's licensed to practice in both Georgia and Florida. Before we finish saying goodbye to you, let me just say thank you to Sherry Boston. She is the DeKalb County Solicitor General in Decatur, Georgia. Thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Boston.
Thank you for having me.
And all the best to you. And David is currently the managing partner at the Windicher Law Firm. It's Windecher. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And we're back. It is our end of year fundraiser. Peter J., Bonnie Berman, I hope you enjoyed that interview. And it was a great interview. It's a great book, and I hope you'll support it with a pledge right now at 866-247-9576, 866-247-9576. Online, it's WLRN.org. The name of the book is The American Dream, History in the Making, or His Story in the Making, for $12.50 a month, or a one-time gift of $150.
So listening to this hour, which just flew by in like no time, Bonnie, I'm thinking of the expressions giving back and paying it forward, phrases that represent what Mr. Windicher has done to a tremendous degree. And I guess that's kind of the theme of our fundraising events here at WLRN, is giving back to the community, giving back to this entity, WLRN, a nonprofit organization beholden to no one but listeners. We're here as a service for listeners. And we love what we do here, and we try to give back to the community as much as possible with programs like Topical Currents on the air for 14 years now, with Bonnie Berman here and Joseph Cooper. My name is Peter J. I'm the director of radio programming here, and I think this is a great way for you to give back to the community. I really do. By supporting Topical Currents, supporting our programming that originates here at WLRN, and of course all the wonderful news and information programming that you get 24/7 here on WLRN. If you think this is a good way to give back to the community, we'd love to hear from you. And yes, you know, this book could be really valuable to someone you know, or someone who someone you know knows that is
exactly
in need of some guidance and some direction.
And some hope.
And some hope.
That there is hope.
Yep.
That you can turn it around. That there, you know, life doesn't have to be, you know, even in
a downward spiral.
Yes. Huh? And because of the impoverished conditions he grew up in, and many people do, they do turn to crime. So it's a great story of hope. And you can again, pick up the book for $150 pledge or $12.50 a month on our sustainer plan at 866-247-9576, 866-247-WLRN, or online, WLRN.org. And of course, we have lots of other gifts for you to choose from.
Sure, sure we do.
And what about the drawing?
Well, the drawing we have too. I just want to mention that we have shortened our drives considerably here at WLRN. So this drive started yesterday, it ends tomorrow. So 7 o'clock tomorrow is the deadline, whether we get to the budgeted revenue goal or not, and we hope you will help us do exactly that. Okay, the drawing we're talking about is a $1,500 shopping spree at the Colonnade Outlets at Sawgrass Mills in Sunrise, generously providing this for us. One lucky winner will be transported to the Sawgrass Mills Mall via limousine and treated to champagne, if that's your pleasure. And then you'll walk out of there with $1,500 worth of merchandise to
and
give.
And we hope not tipsy.
Yeah, right.
But then again, you're not driving.
You're driving, so who cares? And you can give that all away to a loved one or to loved ones for the holidays, or you can keep it all for yourself. We won't question that at all if you're the winner. However, in order to get signed up, you need to either call us at 866-247-WLRN. That's 866-247-9576, or join us online at WLRN.org. You don't have to make a contribution by law in order to participate in this drawing, but of course we hope this will be an incentive for you to do just that, and maybe you will be the lucky winner. But Bonnie, we also have something that's available to everyone, and that's lunch with you and Joe, right?
Right. We'd love to have you for lunch. It's a real treat. It's a treat to meet you and to learn about you. And we talk a little about ourselves as well that we don't do on the air. And we have a wonderful catered lunch from a delightful restaurant. We spend about an hour and a half, and then you come up and you sit in the control room and watch the show happen. So it really is a treat. We'd love to have you and meet you and talk to you. So that's for a $250 pledge, or you can do it on the sustainer plan at
$20.83333333
a month. Okay. Mm-hmm. Whatever is your pleasure. 866-247-9576. 866-247-WLRN online. It's WLRN.org. And if that's not within your means, then how about $10 a month on our sustainer plan, which works out to
33 cents per day.
Okay.
33 cents per day.
Are we worth 33 cents per day? 866-247-9576. Waiting to hear from you. We need to raise $28,000 more today, $88,000 overall. Hey, if we raise $88,000 today, we're done. So the important thing is to make your contribution.
That's right. John Doe of X-Town, Florida says we're not worth 33 cents per day. But certainly many people have said we're worth that and plenty more, including Gail in Fort Lauderdale, Phyllis in Boca Raton, Leonard in West Palm, Donna in Tequesta. The list goes on and on. We've had hundreds of folks joining in this fundraising campaign. Won't you join them? Support Topical Currents programming here at WLRN, 866-247-WLRN.
We thank you so much for tuning in today. The program was produced by Richard Ives, technical direction from Michael Stock, and great editing by Jason Zapka. Again, 866-247-9576. Free audio archives and downloads at WLRN.org. Join us tomorrow for Linda Gassenheimer's Food and Dining with wine columnist Fred Tasker. We'll speak with noted chef Dewey Lasasso, and he's going to bring some food and offer some fare at the Redlander restaurant. Bonnie Berman for Joseph Cooper, thanks so much for joining us. Stay tuned for Here and Now. Up next, from NPR News. But don't stop pledging, please.